fisted toward right. Look at that ball carry.
For some reason, all three animals have appeared in the room with me now. I feel like Noah. What do you guys... All at once leaving. I'm just like, screw that. Nothing going on in here.
What kind of animals? By saying animals, you're implying that you have like...
Barnyard animals, mostly.
Elks or something, you know?
I've got about 8 head of cattle in here. Or sheep. And lemur.
Sheep are strictly for personal use.
A falcon?
Yeah. An osprey. Keep the falcon. Yeah. Keep the falcon company.
And a norwal.
Yeah, but he just sits around on the floor just kind of flapping and trying to breathe. So, crushing under the weight of his own blubber. Yeah, so how about Notre Dame? Woo!
Listen, shut up, everybody.
Yeah.
On the other hand, your coach interviewed with the Eagles yesterday. I don't know who he's going to replace, Joe Walsh or Don Henley, but...
Wait, Don Henley as in the...
I just read that he auditioned for the Eagles.
So wait,
maybe he interviewed with the Philadelphia Eagles. That might make more sense.
I get what you're saying. Wow, you go to Google and look up Don Henley. There's an amazing white man afro picture. It's really something to behold.
Damn it. That's what I get for trusting Bluetooth. Now I got to go back to like a horrible, just regular microphone, but I'll try and keep it from rubbing on my clothing.
Wow, that is nice.
I podcast completely naked, so.
In that afro picture, apparently Don Henley won a gold medal at the Melbourne Olympics.
I was noticing that.
It's a good look.
Yeah, I'm guessing it wasn't in swimming. Cause
not with that hair.
Not with that hair, the drag would be amazing. Wind up going backwards.
All right, sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
I really had a plan like a month ago. Like a month ago, I was planning for this podcast, and no such luck.
The plan fell through.
Plan fell through, and I didn't know till today.
Best laid plans.
Yeah, it was fine. I could sort of hear what you guys were saying, and there was a lot of interference. I basically felt like it must be what like when Dolan is in the podcast, like he sort of is half paying attention to what's going on. Really, no clue.
That's our what?
What's that?
He's too busy looking up Don Henley now.
So. Actually, what I just looked up. There are tickets. This is amazing. There are tickets still available to the Cub convention. Did we know it's $60 a ticket?
Oh,
60. Jesus, no wonder there's still available. But
Dolan, that's exactly how much your mom has loved you for the last.
I know.
10.
There's a minimum of 10 though. That's all they'll let you buy. <It's> 10 tickets to this fucking thing. And apparently, Soriano is
minimum or maximum.
I'd pay $60 bucks just to hang out with Alfonso for a day. I wonder maybe he'll come to the bar on Friday and we can hang out with him. That'd be good.
Are we going? Did anyone make plans for the convention yet? I don't go on your website anymore, Dolan.
Plans?
Unless you write. Yeah, like, are we going to? Are we going to the bar in the hotel that it's at? What is it? The Sheraton now?
Yeah, it's in the Sheraton.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. Not that was a huge draw for anyone out there, but yeah.
You'd make it happen.
You know how fun that would have been to do a live podcast from shit?
God, that's exactly what I was thinking, you know.
That would have
been. What time is it? What What date?
Doesn't matter. We start it whenever the fuck we want to start it.
Oh, there's a there is a thread here. Maybe I should go to my own website once in a while.
I haven't been on your message board for a year, and before that, it was probably a year before that.
Honestly, I forget I have one.
I got rid of the shout box finally. Those fucking stragglers. Go find your own shit to do.
There's a thread. People are wondering if we're going to meet up at the Sheraton, and somebody said here, there's a link. It says Google's 10th result for Sheraton Chicago Cubs convention bar meetup, and it's a Wikipedia page for a furry convention.
Oh god.
Also, 1 through 9 are also furry conventions, just different ones.
Did you ever used to read the Dugout? The one with the furry convention and the Brewers.
That I did not see.
I don't know why that one just stuck with me. I'm trying to find it.
There's a lot of very good Dugouts.
Oh yeah, no, it was pretty great. Yeah, here it is. Because what actually happened was that there was an actual furry convention, and it wound up like screwing the Brewers over because they couldn't get any sleep because of all the the furries.
Ryan Braun had to fuck so many foxes.
It's just terrible. Actually, that's not the one. Yeah, at any rate, it was one of the better ones, though.
Prince Fielder just spent the entire night chasing a woman dressed as a hog around, hoping for.
The guys want to meet at the. I don't know where the double door is in relation to the Sheraton.
Hang on a second.
That's what they want.
Is that where BH's band is playing?
Yes.
Because the last time I went to see BH's band, some fucking douchebag, quote unquote, stand up comic just sat there and did the worst set of stand up comedy I've seen in quite. And I've been around a lot of open mic nights. This guy was flat out awful. His entire shtick was just this like beat in the background, and then he would just be like, "Shit got fucked up." Like, and he was like telling a story that I would not have wanted to have heard from one of my friends. And then every once in a while, he'd stop and just go, "And then shit got fucked up." It was the worst bit I've ever heard in my life, and I've heard and watched some terrible stand up comedy. So if that guy is playing for BH's band again, I have no interest.
Do you know how long it took me to write that set?
I would say 11 seconds.
However long it takes to down like 4 shots of liquor and get on stage.
It was I'm
planning on making an appearance. And I'm really all we need, I think.
I'm excited. Do you have a hotel or you want to come out to Naperville and crash?
I'm open to anything.
All right. I don't know if we can. The last train out is like 12:40.
Yeah,
so we're probably
how do we get back?
Yeah, there's no way I'd be able to make it. It's January. That's my parents' 40th anniversary.
I say we go and we make Bruce Miles take us home.
Oh my God.
Bruce, we need a ride. Where are you going? I don't know. We don't even know where you live. Well, I mean, Miles has been pestering us for like 2 months about whether we were coming to this or not. And I didn't make it this year, so I figured I better get down there this year.
Well, Dolan, okay, well, here's the plan. If you want, we can try and make it back out to Naperville. We might have to take like a $110 cab ride.
I just said that to Barry. I'm like, well, I don't know how I'd get back. We'd probably have to take a cab. What would that cost? Like $1,000?
No, I've taken a couple cabs out of the city, and average is probably $100. So if we get enough people to come with us, so late.
That's why I go to Naperville. Why? Because we need to split up the cab fare. Okay.
Jesus Christ, what are we doing in Naperville?
We don't even need to split it at that point. As long as those two want to get back, if we get someone that's blackout drunk, get them out to Naperville, as long as that cab driver has a fare back to the city, he's not going to double charge us.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome. You wake up next morning and you have a $100 cab fee to go like 6 blocks.
All right, I got a story. So I work part-time for Living Social, And we do like these. Basically, I like run adult field trips with drinking. And it's hilarious and it's a great job. I'm about to do, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to do an overnight ski trip up to Devil's Head, which is outside of Madison. We're obviously leaving from Chicago. Last year, we had a guy get so belligerently drunk, he took a $400 cab ride back to Chicago. I think he just didn't know where the hell he was. Jumped in a cab, gave the cab driver the address. The cab driver's probably like, all right. And $400 cab ride back to Chicago. Missed the entire second half of the adventure. Like, we had stuff planned for the next day, but this guy was so trashed, he jumped in a cab and cost himself a plane ticket, basically, back to Chicago.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. I mean, I could get there. I could get to Chicago for $400.
Exactly.
From Sacramento. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Well, why don't you? You can write it off as a business expense.
There you go.
Yeah. Except, as I said, it's on the day of my parents' 40th anniversary.
Wait a minute. Don't you think your parents just want to have sex with each other on their anniversary and don't want to deal with their dumbass kid?
Did you not catch the 40th part?
I never understood.
I could see if it was their 50th. It's only 40.
My parents want to take us on an Alaskan cruise for their 40th, and I'm like, Mom and Dad, I never understood. Maybe it's because I'm divorced. Like, I never understood wanting people to celebrate your anniversary. Like, for me, the anniversary is like you two. That's your thing. Like, I don't really remember where my older sister is married. She's been married for going on 10 years. My parents are going to be going on 40. I don't really get them wanting me to be any part of their celebration.
Like, don't jinx us, Mike.
Yeah, because after 40 years, they're tired of being alone with each other, and they just want other people around.
That's fair. Okay, that's a reasonable explanation. But, like, other than that, like, I don't... Especially, like, my sister. Like, she's great. Her husband's great. Her kids are great. But, like, they didn't even, like, create me. Like, their anniversary has nothing to do with me. Like, if they had never met each other, I would still be here just doing my shit. And, like, my parents, I get it a little bit more, but, like, who the hell wants to celebrate an anniversary with other people? I guess maybe you guys have been married, I'm sure, longer than I would have been. And, like,
how long it is what it is. Warren? I don't even remember marrying him.
Oh, God, it's been forever, yeah.
I guess maybe that
is. We're making it work, man. We're making it work.
I got to say, like, if I had lasted, you know, 5 years or something with my ex, like, I definitely would have wanted as many people as possible around for the 50th anniversary that were available.
Yeah, well, we're going to be doing, I think it's going to be it's next year's going to be our 10th anniversary. We were thinking of doing a great big get together or whatever. Mainly because when we got married, we were in college and all of our, like, you know, we had no money. So it was, I mean, we had a nice wedding. We kind of just had a party, basically. But now that we have cash, you know, throw a nicer party.
Well, see, this will be 6 years for us in March. So I want to invite you guys to go on an Alaskan cruise with us.
Wait, Dolan, it's only 6 for you?
Yeah, only.
Oh. Oh, that sounds like how I would have sounded if I was at 6. But like, you actually give a shit about your wife.
Oh, I think that's the bare minimum right there to last.
Yeah, just give a shit. Just just give a shit. Not multiple shits. Just one. How you guys been? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy whatever. Christmas Hana Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
So, anything new, anything exciting happen in your worlds, your multiples of worlds?
Well, I was going to see if you guys were up for, I think in July, we need to go to Cooperstown to see Sammy Sosa get inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'm really excited about it. I don't know how many votes he got because I didn't see the results, but I'm sure he got them all. And I can't wait to go. It's going to be great.
See his ticket get punched.
Yeah. I feel like he got one less than Aaron Seeley got.
Aaron fucking Seeley.
He got a vote, really? Friends.
That was even more of a protest than the guys who sent back the blank ballots.
Like, oh no, yeah. It's like a, I'm that's like a negative one.
I was gonna say, Todd Walker didn't even get a
vote. Are you suggesting that you would have voted for Todd Walker if you had?
Maybe over Aaron Seeley.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys I'd vote for over Aaron Seeley. That's just proof,
you know. Aaron, yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Seeley was fine. I mean, he had a couple of years where he won a bunch of games with a almost 5 ERA, but, you know, I mean, he just, 4.61 career ERA.
Here's my thing. Like, a vote for Aaron Seeley, like, if you don't vote twice for John Lieber, like, you are a horrible human being. Like, Aaron Seeley was a way worse pitcher than John Lieber and, like, Kevin Tappany.
Lieber was an actual, I mean, he had ace potential if he had blown his arm out.
Hall of Fame. You're talking about the Hall of Fame.
No, I know. I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with you. Lieber was a far better pitcher than Seeley and far better than Kevin Tappany.
Yeah, none of them are Hall of Famers.
No. You're saying that if Don Baylor hadn't brought him back out after an hour and a half rain delay to finish a game, that John Lieber might have actually strung together a solid career. That was more egregious than most, I shouldn't say anything, than most of the stuff that Dusty did.
Yeah. Remember when John Lieber and Kerry Woods struck out, or like pitched like a million innings back-to-back of scoreless baseball and struck out like 1,000 guys?
Yep.
Yeah.
Those were good times.
No, I mean, for like a 5-year stretch there, Lieber was pretty darn good. I mean, I think he was right before he blew his elbow out. He threw 251 innings. So,
well, then 232 the next year. That was the year Baylor brought it back.
Oh, yeah.
And then, whoops, 6 wins the next year.
Well, I got to throw out a Kevin Tappany story really quick. A longtime reader from the inception, basically, of Higher Gymnasium, Section 242. I went in on season tickets with him for a couple years. Good dude. He actually bought Kevin Tappany's old house a couple of years ago, up in Winnetka. And so he's given me a couple, like he gave me a 1997, I want to say, Cubs media guide that I want to do something with at some point on HE. But he just recently got rid of Kevin Tappany's old fridge. And I realized like I missed like a prime opportunity to say, thank God you didn't buy John Lieber's house, because you would have needed at least 3 more guys to carry out the fridge. Because John Lieber is fat, guys. He's like a really fat, really fat guy.
Yes.
He was hippie.
He had birthing hips. So I'll give you that.
He was he was corn fed. He was a big dude. He's a big dude with no chin. And then Kevin Tappany had 2 chins.
Kevin Tappany looked always to me like, I don't know, like a low-rent version of Steve Guttenberg.
Wait a minute.
There's a low-rent version of Steve Guttenberg?
Yeah, exactly.
Steve Guttenberg was the low-rent version of Steve Guttenberg.
Right. Steve Guttenberg was like, I thought Paul Reiser was the low-rent version of Steve Guttenberg. It's good start. Good start. I missed you guys.
I was gonna say, all right, when do we start this thing? Yeah. This thing on.
Oh, once you bring out the Gutenberg jokes, I don't. He was looking good though. I mean, Gutenberg, you know, have for his age with the Bible thing and all that. No, that was.
Oh my god, that was awful.
Really, really stretching that. Yeah.
Okay, so about this Hall of Fame thing, I have a bone to pick, of course, like I always do. Here's my thing about Hall of Fame voting, and I'm okay with no one making it into the Hall of Fame this year, but like the writers switching votes and just I feel like if I had a Hall of Fame vote, which I, God willing, I never will, like vote for the guys. I don't care what year it is that they're up for the ballot. You vote for the guys that deserve it, and you don't vote for the guys that don't deserve it. It's dumb to change your vote. here's my suggestion for the Hall of Fame whatever committee. If you really think that the first ballot is such a sacred thing, make it the first year to get inducted into the Hall of Fame, make it a 95% hurdle. And you cannot make the Hall of Fame unless you clear 95% in the first ballot. After that, whatever, drop it down to what, 675, what, I don't even know what it is.
75. Yeah, that, I mean, that always got me was the, well, I never vote for anyone on their first year of eligibility.
That's the dumbest ass thing in the world. That's the dumbest thing in the world. It's what cost Sano, like, all Sano, and Sano deserved it. Sano deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. All he wanted was to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care if he was a dick. If he deserves it, he deserves it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. And you know what? Don't take this like steroid thing out of the writer's hands. And like, let's be honest, Steve Rosenblum and Phil Rogers are fucking idiots. They have no reason to like determine who has their bust in the hall, their plaque in the Hall of Fame. Like, take that, take those. If you don't think, if Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens shouldn't be on the ballot, don't let the idiot writers decide whether or not they that there should be a steroids issue or not. If these guys are, if they shouldn't be on the ballot, don't put them on the ballot. Barry Bonds, if I don't know, I mean, the guy was a monster no matter what, and he put up numbers that were Babe Ruthian. So like,
right.
To me, I think the guy probably should be in the Hall of Fame, steroids or not. I hate to say it because he's such a fuck.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. A, it wasn't against the rules of the game at the time. There were no rules. There was no testing. You know, that's on the league and that's on the Players Association. But there was no, they didn't break any rules, whether or not they were, you know, obviously cheating. I mean, you look at Bonds over the years. I mean, God, his head just got so big.
think it's odd that a 36-year-old man needed a bigger hat and bigger shoes all of a sudden?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It was fairly obvious that something weird was going on. And I wonder how many of these guys. Obvious. Yeah, I wonder how many of these guys are going to wind up dying from weird cancers in their 50s. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see in kind of a sad way. Yeah, but I mean, you can't. I don't know. It's like, you know, you don't know who was and who wasn't juicing, and you don't even know how many of those, you know, how much it helped, how many of those guys and whatnot. Because I've seen, you know, things on Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus that say it really didn't, you know, it helped a little, but it doesn't help as much as a juiced ball would. And then the reality is,
I think the reason guys cheat is because it works. I mean, that's why they took that stuff. But writers only, writers don't need much to act like assholes. I mean, these are the same baseball writers that Willie Mays was not a unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Joe DiMaggio wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He only got like 7%.
Well, he got 44% of the votes his first year. 44.
Yeah.
So give them a reason to act like assholes and they're going to do it. And this was their.
But wait a minute.
This was their reason du jour.
Was sports writing back then as horrible as it is now? Because I could understand Phil Rogers making a strong case for Joe DiMaggio not being a Hall of Famer. Like, Warren, like, I totally get what you're saying. I think it was Buster Olney made a point on. No, it couldn't have been Buster Olney because it was a good point. Somebody on Twitter made a point.
I was about to say, you said someone made a point that immediately. Yeah.
It had to have been someone that wasn't Buster Olney. Buster Olney's not that bad. But
he's not that bad. It might have been Stark. He was writing a lot about.
I don't think I follow him, though. But regardless, somebody made the point that like the argument like, oh, he would have been a Hall of Famer before the steroids is such a specious argument because like, how the hell do you know when he started doing steroids? Like, yeah, Sammy Sosa, 97 to 98, that's probably when he started doing steroids. Let's be honest, like maybe he was doing steroids at like a casual like user amount before then. And like Nomar, look at Nomar, he's probably a steroid guy. Alec A-Rod never really like became like a hulking behemoth, not like McGwire, not like Sosa, not like Bonds did, not like Bagwell did. But like a lot of these guys, not like Joe Borowski did and Nephi Perez did, but like a lot of these guys did them to the point where, like, it's like, hey, you didn't really know. Sosa was such an idiot between 97 and 98. And if you're going to, like, roid your fucking face off in a postseason, why would you ask the clubhouse manager to be like, hey, can you also stitch some elastic bands into my shirt sleeve? So, like, my, like, grotesquely veiny biceps are, like, bulking, like, threatening to rip out of my shirt sleeves for the entire summer.
Yeah, that was a bit much. But, I mean, then you look at guys like Glenn Braggs. I mean, the dude, nobody roided more than Glenn Braggs. I mean, if you go back and look at pictures of him, the dude still had to wind up in Japan, you know, because he sucked.
See, wait a minute, you think Glenn Braggs was on steroids just because he used to routinely break bats at the end of his swing? It would hit his back and snap in half, and you think maybe he was on steroids?
Yeah.
I'm going to need some proof.
I just remember one time, and he had like ripped, or maybe it was that they had changed the jerseys or something, and so they only had vests. It was like, I don't remember.
Yeah, the Reds went to vests, and then
most of the guys were wearing t-shirts.
T-shirt, yeah.
Yeah, well, that, yeah. And I just remember it was just like a spider web of inch thick veins from his shoulder to his fingertips. I was like, something ain't right there.
Well, like, looking at Jeff Bagwell, and, like, Jeff Bagwell was one of my, I don't know why, he was one of my favorite non-Cubs for a long time, and like, I really liked him. He was fun to watch hit. He was a monster, and, like,
it's like his batting stance.
Yeah,
yeah, he's taking a shit the entire time he was playing his, yeah. But, like, exactly, Warren, like, looking at him, like, he doesn't pass the, you know, if it's I know it, if it's porn, kind of like Supreme Court right. test. Like, if you think that Jeff Bagwell, that's why it drives me fucking nuts when I make the argument to stupid ass White Sox fans that Frank Thomas was not on steroids, and they're like, no way, he's clean. I'm like, you're an idiot. He went to Auburn in the 80s. He's not clean. I don't care if he like roided out of his mind through the 80s and was clean during his baseball career. He to get that physique, he roided out of his fucking mind. Like, he has the exact same head as Barry Bonds, but he had it in 93. And, like, it just, I don't know. Like,
I was never completely convinced that Thomas was, I mean, I don't know. Really? I think everybody that played in that era is suspect.
Of course they are.
But I mean, you look at the arc of his career, he doesn't have that sudden, spectacular, you know, I mean, his best years were when, you know, his age 28, 29 seasons.
No, but he has the exact, when they started testing for steroids, this guy could suddenly not stay healthy, just like Bagwell. Like, all of a sudden, Frank Thomas could not stay on the field when the actual testing tightened up. And, like, it's like, oh, now he's got an ankle thing, now he's got, and, like, he had, and I know he was older, but like he had the exact same with Nomar, and like
he snapped his groin muscle clean off the bone or whatever, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen necessarily to normal people,
right?
I mean, the main reason I find Bagwell a little bit a little more suspect is the fact that, I mean, he, in 162 games, he hit 18 home runs at the age of 24. In 159 games at the age of 32, he hit 47. So it's like, I don't know, you know, is it the roids? Is it a different park? I mean, I think
They did leave the Astrodome. I don't know what year Minute Maid opened. It opened later than I thought it did. Because I remember,
2000.
You know, I wrote that long Hall of Fame thing, and I looked all this crap up, and now I've forgotten all of it. So.
Yeah. I think it was like 2001.
Oh, well, then this would have been the last year in the Dome, then.
No, 98, no, they were still in the Astrodome, because that's where the Cubs went after Brant Brown dropped the
ball. Yeah.
And then the bird attacked him in the outfield. There's a bird attacking Brant Brown in the outfield.
And nobody's coming to his defense.
It was actually a young Marlin bird.
His massive.
That bird was not nearly fat enough to be Marlon Byrd. Well, wow, you know, it's not just the guys that get big, obviously, that are on steroids. I mean, I know for sure Tony Campana is on them, He's only 6 years old. That's a pretty big dude for a 6 year old when you think about it. He's like 5'4". How many 5'4" 6 year olds do you know?
I know you're setting yourself up for that joke, but you're right. That's the thing. Like Nomar, I wouldn't have suspected Nomar, but like
I don't know, man. Look for the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Remember Alex Sanchez, the outfielder he played for the Brewers?
Yeah. And
he was one of the first guys to get caught. And he didn't have a muscle on his body.
Nefi Perez is built like a fucking bowling ball. And he did PED.
Nefi couldn't get off the amphetamines when they started testing for those.
And I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, I mean, it's pretty much an open, you know, everybody knows Willie Mays was hooked on amphetamines. And those are actual performance enhancers, especially in a game like baseball. So it's like, how can you hold up Willie Mays or Hank Aaron or whatever
It is weird the stuff that's okay to do. Like, Greg Maddux, towards the end of his career, got LASIKs. I mean, they literally went in and changed the shape of his eyeballs, and all of a sudden he had like 2015.
Because
it's legal. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done it, but it is weird that you can say, oh no, God forbid you had any muscle, but would you like superhuman vision? That's fine.
Well, hey, don't, hang on a second. Beyond though. That, I remember reading an interview with Randy Johnson. He was still pitching, so this was like 2005 or something, and it was about steroids, and it was an interview with him, and he was saying, well, you know, look, I never knowingly took a steroid, but I took everything there was off the shelf at GNC, so maybe I was at some point, you know, not legal. But then he was talking about, at the end of his career, he would get this injection into his knee because he basically had no cartilage left, and it was this stuff that was a gel that was made out of the rooster's comb, like the red thing on the nose of a rooster and on their head or whatever. They like ground that up and injected it into his knee, and it basically was a temporary replacement cartilage, and it allowed him to pitch like another 5 years. So if that's not performance enhancing,
well, hang on a second. Hang on a second, though. Like, now we're getting ridiculous because, like, first of all, like, for Greg Maddux, like, yeah, that's the same as wearing glasses, like wearing an overprescription glasses. Like Brian Roberts a few years ago, probably 10 at this point, 8 years ago maybe, like started wearing these contacts that were like weirdly tinted,
right?
Like,
yeah,
gave him like HD vision. Yeah, the like yellow vision.
Like, he just wanted to look like a cat. He just thought it was cool looking.
But, like, that's the thing. Like, you can't – I mean, yes, performance – of course, lifting weights is a performance – I mean, it's not a drug, right. But lifting weights is performance enhancing. But, like –
I wasn't saying that what Maddux did was wrong. I'm just saying that the stuff that our media friends decide to get outraged about is so random. You know, what kind of drug therapy is okay and what kind is, you know, horrific? I will admit that one of the reasons I enjoy the fact that the steroid guys are being screwed after their careers is that I hate Roger Clemens and Mark McGwire, and it's going to keep them out of the Hall of Fame, and so I enjoy that.
Barry Bonds. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like Barry. I didn't hate Barry as much. Because
I hated Barry more than I hated Clemens.
I hated Clemens more than anyone.
Yeah. See, when I was a kid, I was way more into, like, I thought pitchers were cool. So, like, Clemens and Randy Johnson and whatnot were, like, my heroes when I was, 13, 14. Or
Clemens is one of the greatest all-time sports villains ever. Like, he did every choice that he could have made where it's like, I could be a good guy or a bad guy. He always chose bad guy. Like, he really played the part as well as he possibly could. So, good on him. Here, let me throw this out for you guys, and this is probably going to be infuriating, but like, I hate to say this, but I have a feeling Bud Selig is someday going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's infuriating to me, but like,
oh, yeah.
But it's probably going to happen because he's a long tenured commissioner. All the stupid ass owners love him because they don't hold.
Well, because he has doubled their income.
Exactly. And they're not held accountable for anything. He's let these monsters run around in the game. One of the recurring themes from Twitter today with the Hall of Fame voting, every single sports writer was basically saying, Everybody knew this was going on. Everybody knew this was going on in the late 90s, early 2000s. Everybody from not just from the clubhouse level, all the writers, the managers, everybody knew this was happening. And like, so meaning Selig knew it was happening and he didn't do a goddamn thing. And he's going to have a plaque in the Hall of Fame at some point. That's the, to me, that's the most infuriating thing. This inept piece of shit, commissioner is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he'll get in probably on a, I don't know how they vote on commissioners or whatnot. I think it's, I think front office guys are strictly through the veterans committee or something like that. But, yeah, he'll get in with no trouble, and then a guy like Bonds, who essentially was walking through the massive loophole that Selig left, is most likely. I mean, he might eventually make it in, but I mean, as of right now, it's not looking too good, and he might be the next Pete Rose. You know?
And Pete Rose should be in. Was there a more corrupt commissioner than Mountain Landis? It drives me nuts, the double standard for the front office versus Rose was a piece of shit. He's still a piece of shit. He's a horrible human being. So was Babe Ruth. And so was Ty Cobb. It's just a matter of what you did. Actually, Ty Cobb was a way worse human being than Pete Rose. Well,
what's funny about that is most of the stuff people say about Ty Cobb is a lot of it's very specious. It's the guy that – where it all comes from is the biography that –
Oh, Stump.
Yeah, Stump. Oh, you unplug your mic, Andy. Al Stump hated Ty Cobb. They hated each other. So people are like, well, half of what he says may or may not be true. So it's not even 100%. The thing, I mean, he wasn't any kind of a paragon because, I mean, he almost beat a crippled man to death.
Jimmy Buffett to death.
Okay, but fuck Ty Cobb. What? Cap Anson.
Anybody who gets that joke should get some kind of, we should give them all a dollar.
Was he in the movie Get Cobb? Is that
yes? He played the guy. He actually played the guy that Cobb, the guy with no legs, that Cobb beat up, was played by Jimmy Buffett in the movie.
Huh. Interesting.
Okay, Cap Anson then. Really good. The Ty Cobb controversy. Cap Anson was a very documented, horrendous racist piece of shit. I'm sure he was a misogynist if he was a racist. Like, he was just a horrible, horrible, horrible human being. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Even by that era's standards.
Exactly. It was okay. It wasn't okay. Even when people were using different drinking fountains for coloreds and whites, Cap Anson still stood out as a horrible human being. That's amazing. And he's in the Hall of Fame. So, Pete Rose was a dumb shit, and, he had a gambling addiction, and somebody should have probably addressed it at the commissioner of baseball at the time instead of,
and the old argument goes back. He broke an actual rule written down on the books, whereas there was no rule against steroids.
Except whenever C-League wants it. It's integrity of the game, or whenever the commissioner wants it. The integrity of the game rule is the most – God damn it, baseball. From a legal perspective, baseball is the most obnoxious sport ever. I watched The Curious Case of Curt Flood probably between the time we had the last podcast and this podcast. Baseball is such an obnoxiously, ambiguously frustrating sport to argue about because, it's such an old boys club. It's such, it's just a frustrating piece of shit game for the most part when it's not between the foul lines. It's an annoying, obnoxious, terrible thing. And every time the Hall of Fame voting comes up, it's that stupid old boys club. Was it Schmidt that said that he would never vote for anyone basically in the first ballot because he just wants this to be some exclusive?
No, he said, worse than that. Yeah, he said he would never vote for anyone. Yeah. He said if it gets to the point, it was Schmidt.
Yeah.
Yeah, saying that if it ever gets to the point that it is a in front of the Veterans Committee, then by that point you're not a Hall of Famer anyway.
That was his when he wouldn't vote for Sano. That was the reason. He said, "Well, if he was a Hall of Famer, he'd be in already." Well, I'm glad we're having this committee that you're on to try to pick other people to go into the Hall of Fame. I think it was, well, I know it was Darren Rovell, everybody's favorite Twitter douchebag, who was talking about, and this is true, how much money the Hall of Fame is losing because of this. If you figure like this, coming up in July, they should have had an induction class of Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mike Piazza, Sammy Sosa. Yeah. They should have had all those guys. Can you imagine the ridiculous crowd that they would have had cloud not been over? I mean, it's two of the absolute greatest players of all time.
Well, and not just that, but
it's the East Coast, West Coast, and Midwest.
Yeah, I was about to say, dopey Cub fans. Three of the five biggest teams, you know, support wise, you know, you've got the Yankees and the Cubs and the Giants, you know, and the
Boston.
Mets and Boston.
Well, I don't know. I don't think Red Sox fans would have gone for Roger.
No,
Sox
fans are dumber than Cubs fans.
Yeah, but they also
I don't know that anybody's dumber than Cub fans.
Really possible.
I know a lot of them, and I'm pretty sure there aren't any dumber.
Are them?
Hang on a second, though. Like, let's be honest. Clemens's Red Sox career was kind of similar, not to the same extent, kind of similar to Maddox's Cubs career. And I would, if I had the wherewithal,
Clemens was a lot better because he was there longer. Well, no. He won like 192 games in three.
Well, but I know. Maddox had the comeback though at the end, and like Maddox had. I feel like had a more of a connection to the city and less of a harsh departure. It was more the Cubs' fault that Maddox departed. It was the fault. So I feel like Maddox had a bigger connection to the city, but I would have gone to I will go to Maddox's in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
If I had have an opportunity, which I will.
I don't think
because his speech is going to be amazing.
I don't think he was that good. I don't think I wouldn't vote for him.
350 wins.
Yeah, I mean, come on,
60.
But he was good before he started taking steroids.
He got that eye surgery, and then
I was gonna say 355
throwing the ball with his eyes.
I got into an argument today that the Pedro Martinez and I wrote this article a couple of years back. Pedro Martinez when the Clemens thing came out. Who was the best non-steroid pitcher of the modern era? And like we're assuming Pedro Martinez and Greg Maddux didn't do steroids. Look at
I think Pedro might be dirty.
Do you really?
I don't know. He got hurt so often.
Yeah, those Red Sox teams he was on were
all just juiced out.
Fair.
I have no doubt Maddox did not juice. I mean, he might have. I don't know.
If he did, he was taking the stuff wrong.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
With Maddox.
Well, my favorite steroid story though is that the little clubhouse guy with the Mets, Kirk Radomski, the one that got busted, he's in the Mitchell report, and he says that Mo Vaughn had him get steroids, and Mo would take them and then not work out. And he started complaining that they don't work. It's like, Mo, they're supposed to help you work out. You don't just take them and get bigger. He said Mo would shoot up, and then and for a half hour, he'd just sit in his chair in front of his in the clubhouse. I don't feel anything. So Mo,
you would think if Maddox was injecting something in his body, he would wear a T-shirt under his jersey.
It's a sad state of the Cub history that my two favorite Cubs of all time to this day are still Sean Dunstan, who's just a horribly flawed player who I just loved, and Greg Maddux, who was only there for a little less than half of his career. And he had most of his best years after he got the hell out of town. And they're still my two favorite Cubs. And I don't think anybody's really making a run to get into that picture right now either.
Dunstan was just, I mean, you look at Dunstan, I think his stats, you know, when you look at them, I think he was a completely league average player. Like if you look at the advanced metrics, but he was just so much fun to watch.
Well, for you, like, usually for half a season, he was.
Yeah.
Either the first half or the second half, he'd have one great half and then just a complete disaster to always pull all of his numbers into the crapper one way or the other.
Swing was such a mess.
He swung the bat back as fast as he did ahead.
Yep. Yeah. That was Ricky Gutierrez when he didn't just release the bat into the stands did the same thing. Hey, Warren. Yeah. All right, this is a good topic. Who's your two favorite Cubs of all time?
Two favorite of all time. Well, it's probably Grayson Dunston. Dawson has to be one of them. Gosh, I don't know. Probably Dawson. There's so many and pick from.
Take your time. Yeah,
well, there's like five to pick from.
Where's Manny Trio on that list?
It's gonna be probably Dawson and Kerry Wood. Probably.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We got some overlap then, because my two probably would be Grace and Wood. So we got a lot of overlap there. But
Like I said, when I was I wasn't even that young when I was already in my 20s when Wood came up. But I just always really liked watching like power pitchers, like guys that would just, you know, throw the ball past people. And when we had Wood and Pryor, it was just like amazing. And then, of course,
and for me, it was basically because Wood is, I mean, he's a year or so older, but like basically Wood was my age. Like that was kind of the first, like my transition from like, everyone in baseball is now younger than me to like from everyone being these like men that I grew up watching to like, oh shit, you're a kid now. And like calling baseball players kids.
Yeah.
Wood was kind of my transition guy. And like, I don't know, such a, again, I'm not going to ruin your guys' image of Kerry Wood from what Sully told me, but like he always at least in front of the, he was smart enough at the podium to always say the right things and like be the guy that we all wanted him to be, despite what he was in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I don't want to know anything about any of these guys. I'm guessing they're all dumb as posts and just real, you know, assholes. But it's
not
like,
Mark Grace. Mark Grace is smart. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a Rhodes Scholar. And he has never, ever fucked a girl.
He's a saint and a gentleman.
I mean, here's how much of a saint he is. He's going to voluntarily spend 3 years in jail just to help the inmates. He just wants to be around them and try to touch some of their lives and help them out as better people. Right. And the only way could get in there was he had to go out and get a second DUI within a year to get in there. And so he did it on purpose because obviously he's way too smart for that to have been an accident. I mean, he's a great humanitarian.
He babysat Jim Essien's kids. That's all I can. Oh, Jim Essien got a job, by the way.
I know. So
I saw that.
So that's the end of your website.
Yep. Shutting it down.
Or are you just going to start calling it Hired Jim Essien?
Yeah.
There you go. You'll do that.
Well, I know I've written this story before. I don't know if I've ever told it on one of our podcasts, but I met Sean Dunston when he was 18, and I was
really?
And I was 8. we were in Beloit, Wisconsin, they were the Beloit Brewers then, and we were at a game, and my dad claimed to know Rick Rushel, and Rushel was on a rehab assignment with the Quad City Cubs. And so before the game, my dad's standing down there by one of the dugouts yelling at Rick Rushel. And I'm even at 8, I'm embarrassed. I'm like, he doesn't know this guy. Why is he yelling? And so Rushel comes over and my dad tells him who he is. And Rick's like, oh, hi, Mike. And I'm like, oh, what? And so they talk for a little while. Turns out Rick used to hunt on land that wasn't very far from us. And so my dad had met him a few times. So Rick signed my program and then said, oh, there's somebody else's autograph you're going to need to get. And he goes down in the dugout, and like a minute later, this skinny little guy pops his head up and says hi and signs my program. And it was Sean Dunston, the number one pick in all the land.
Number one pick,
ahead of Dwight Gooden. That was a great
movie. Can you imagine if that got flipped? Because chances are Gooden doesn't get... Well, I don't know. I'm just, but chances are good.
Does twice as many drugs in Chicago.
Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking if he's not around Gary Carter and what's his face, Keith Hernandez, then maybe not.
I don't know
that
Gary Carter got him on drugs.
Yeah.
I thought that was the story, that it was Hernandez and Carter.
The Mets were constantly annoyed at what a straight-laced prick Gary Carter was.
Carter is for whatever
everybody
reason.
Everybody else on that team, though, so he had plenty of guys to get stuff from.
Yeah, for whatever reason, Gary Carter is like my least favorite player ever. Like, I hate Gary Carter.
A man is dead, Warren.
Well, yeah, you know, so now I feel bad about it. It doesn't change anything.
Well, Jonah
Rick Kier. Russell, there's a guy who did a lot of steroids.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, he had three. You needed four people to carry his refrigerator.
Big Daddy.
The Jonah Carey, he's a baseball writer, and I guess he's writing for Grantland right now. Anyway, I follow him on Twitter. He's writing a book about the Expos. And he had a thing, and he tweets occasionally things that he's learned as he does
research. Whoa, what the hell was that?
Mike's rubbing his microphone on his
I think he was. Anyway, Jonah Carey, go on.
I was rubbing it into the top of Jerry Carter's Brillo pad there.
His perm. He said that when the Expos knew they had to trade Carter because they couldn't afford him anymore, the only team that made an offer were the Mets. Now, huh. I can see why the Cubs wouldn't if they had Jody Davis, for God's sakes. How could you possibly find room on your team for Gary Carter when you have the great Jody Davis?
One thing that kind of amazed me when I was watching the Sandberg game, you know, I have those DVDs, I was watching the Sandberg game. Jody Davis, his batting stance was...
you didn't like the hunch?
Well, I mean, that's fine, but it was
in the middle of his chest. I don't know how he even could raise the bat above his head like that.
Not just that, yeah, exactly. Not just that, the fact that he stood completely dead still. Nope. He was like a tree trunk up there.
Right.
And he didn't even really move in between pitches. Like, he would drop his front arm, but still stand there. It was amazing. I don't know.
I like the fact he didn't want any momentum ruining his swing. He just wanted it to be all arms.
All wrists.
And just see how high that you could hit that pop-up to third.
Oh, Jody.
I went to when I was a kid, it couldn't have been 84, it must have been 83. I went to a 4th of July doubleheader, Cubs and Expos. And Cubs were getting beat. Actually, it was... If the Cubs had won both games, they would have gone into first place. Hmm. And
what year was this again?
I think it was 83. I have to look this up.
Okay. Mike, are you okay?
I'm still. I'm just listening.
What are you doing?
What? Because we're getting the mic rub again.
All right,
go on now. 83.
So anyway,
you're weaving a tale.
The Cubs are losing the whole game, but then they rally in the ninth, and Jody comes up with two outs in the ninth, and he has a chance to win the game. And so the crowd is it's completely sold out, and it's, you know, and that was rare for them. And it's everybody's chanting Jody, 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 and he struck out. It's like, oh, it was just awful. So then we wait around in between games, and then we start the second game, and they of course get behind right away. So they're ruining another 3 hours of our lives. And they rally in the ninth again. And it comes around to the pitcher's spot. And so they bring – here comes Jody to pinch hit. And so the place is going crazy because certainly he's going to come through this time. And so it's Jody. He swings at a pitch about 4 feet over his head and strikes out. And he got booed like nobody I've ever heard. It was the greatest thing ever. It went from, yay, you're the best, you're going to win the game, to Jesus, you suck. You are the worst player ever. And as an impressionable young kid, I learned right then how quickly and how much fun it is to turn on people as soon as they
Everything I know in life, I learned.
If that was
Jody Davis.
Dolan, just so you know, if that was Rob Mikowiak, he would have hit two grand slams that
only
day.
Only if his wife had a baby that day.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No, the second grand slam would have impregnated and made his wife had a baby right there.
Mm-hmm. Second, hey, there's a second one in here. Yeah. So, we've been talking for a while. Is it time to delve into the pop culture? Are we ready for Andy's crappy Netflix picks?
Did we talk about baseball this entire time? We did. We actually
did. Good. Yeah, for almost exactly an hour.
Good job, team. Amazing.
Yeah. Give the people what they want. We don't know what that is. From this.
If we're gonna before we start pop culture, how's P90 going?
Oh yeah,
good.
We need our P90 upgrades or updates.
I just finished my second. What are they called?
Rest week,
recovery week. And so tomorrow.
So did I. You caught up. I knew you were going to catch up to me because I had to take a week off from being sick. Just so you guys know, though, the one person that listens to our podcast just started P90 this week.
Oh, good.
So what you're saying is we need to get them as an actual sponsor.
We're changing lives across this great land of ours.
I didn't think it would ever happen, but I've actually gotten to the point where I don't hate yoga anymore.
No, yoga's fine. Yoga's like, fine after
the first. Now I can really plow through the first 40 minutes when it's just, you know, upward dog, plank, downward dog.
Is you lift your leg, warrior three. Okay, sorry. That's all I'm going to talk about P90 because we exhausted. But I just wanted to know where you were at. I knew you were going to catch me. So I just started the week after you're on today.
So I'm pretty much, I'm going to, at the convention, I'm going shirtless the whole time.
Oh, I'm not wearing pants for sure at the convention, but that's just going to be like every other year.
Yeah, how will that be any different?
Show off your Marlon Byrd-esque legs.
So Bruce Miles, if you want to bring your daughter. No, God, guys, grow up. All right, sorry. Dolan's Netflix.
Okay, I was happy to see they finally added this show because I never watched it when it was first on, and then I just never caught up with it. But It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is on Netflix now. And I know Mike was complaining that the last couple seasons get bad, but I've just made it through season 4. I can't help but binge watch the show, especially since they're only about 20 minutes long. I'm going to watch one. I end up watching 4. And I just love how unapologetically awful they all are. I absolutely love it. But I have the end of season 4 was the beautiful musical that Charlie wrote. The Nightman Cometh.
The Nightman Cometh. Soul.
Yeah, the boy's soul. When you say it like that, it's a boy's soul.
Actually, Dolan, you might have that might be sort of the
so should I like, stop watching now?
Switch. No. Yeah, like, watch it. It's still better than a lot of stuff on TV.
I want to watch the season where Matt gets fat for no reason.
Yeah, that was last season. It was good. Like, Always Sunny, it's a good show. It's a good show. It's still kind of a good show, but like, I guess the guys, Mac and Dennis, were basically the main writers for a long time, and they turned over writing duties to some guys that don't know how to write for Mac and Dennis. And it's gotten significantly worse. But it's a terrific show, and the first 4 seasons for sure are great. They're great.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that Charlie's the one that appears to be getting like going to movies and stuff like that.
See, I think he's the funniest one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's funny to me because now you see him playing like the friend on, you know, romantic comedies or whatever, and he's in that Pacific Rim next summer.
A second though. Like Dennis was in that one movie where the people break into the house and like Liv Tyler and maybe Luke Wilson. No, not Luke Wilson. They're like tied up in chairs. The strangers, the others,
Oh, I thought you were gonna. Huh. No, I do not know. I thought you were gonna say the ref because, but that's like from the early 90s.
No,
Mac was on Lost.
Yeah,
oh,
he was in 2 episodes of Lost.
He got killed on Lost.
Yep.
No. All right. So check.
He wound up marrying Dee in real life.
Yeah, and Charlie and the waitress are married in real life.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dolan, you're obviously on your website, on your internet. Check
the
one.
Dolan.
Dennis was in one. I think it was Liv Tyler. It was the people in masks, like rabbit masks. 3 people. It was a horrible movie.
I think you're just recounting the dream you had after taking like too much Tylenol or something. Well, I don't
possible, but I think this was a movie. Yeah, it might have been a fever dream.
Yeah, I don't know. This is not ringing any bells for
me. I'm telling you, Dennis got hit with an axe. He was basically like the Shining guy, where he got killed with an axe, like right when he showed up to save the day, in a movie. With, I'm telling you, look, I'm not gonna look him up because screw you guys.
He was in. Is it The Strangers? Because he was in The Strangers.
That's exactly what the movie? He was in The Strangers. Yeah, with the three people in masks. Kind of a horrifying movie. Not a good ending. But, well, watch it if you want to see Dennis.
Get hit with an axe, apparently. Yeah,
the Dennis system does not work so well for him in that movie.
What's the Dennis system? I do not remember the Dennis.
It's the seduce women, and it.
Oh, that okay. Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah.
Be funny.
Okay, and I've got a bonus pick, and it's not.
Go.
It's not a Netflix thing. It's a book. You actually have to read this thing.
Oh God, really? I don't know, man.
But it's a book I bought a couple of months ago because I always my favorite TV critic recap guy is Alan Sepinwall, and he wrote a book called "The Revolution Was Televised," where he took 11 what he thought were groundbreaking recent shows, and he devotes a chapter to each of them. And it starts with The Sopranos because that's really where he got his start. He wrote for the Newark Star Ledger, and so because that's the newspaper Tony picks up at the end of the credits, the paper felt like they had to recap all the episodes and hired him to do it. So he's got a whole chapter on The Sopranos and basically how it came about, and a lot of great background stuff on that. So there's a different show for every one. He has a really good one on Lost and how it got made and how it managed to stay on the air at the beginning. And there are spoilers in it, though. So if you start to read about a show that you – like, I haven't watched The Shield. I've only seen the first season of it. I actually had to stop reading that chapter because he started giving away stuff that happened later. I managed to read the entire Buffy the Vampire Slayer chapter, even though I have no intention of ever watching an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I heard that show is good.
According to Sepinwall, it was.
I've seen a couple episodes, but man, it's bad. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
And so he's got a chapter on Mad Men. He's got a chapter on Breaking Bad, and it's just really good. And he couldn't find a publisher for the book. He had this great idea for the book, and he shopped to every publisher, and nobody would buy it. So he said, "Screw it." He figured he had enough people who read him and enough Twitter followers and stuff. He could just publish it and sell it. And so he did. He said he paid a guy to copy edit it for him because it's hard to copy edit your own stuff. And he paid somebody like $200 to design the cover. And he self-published it. And a real publisher like 2 weeks ago actually bought it from him because he'd sold so many copies on his own. So yeah. So not only that, it's a success story that way. So I urge you. I bought it. I just bought it on my through Kindle to put on my iPad. So if you go ahead and still do that. It's called The Revolution Was Televised.
Cool.
By Alan Sepinwall. It's a great book.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen a sequel.
There we go.
Sorry. Dogs.
Yeah. Wow, that is the.
Stop it. I'm leaving. I'm running into a closed room right now. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
It's all right. I'll edit it out.
No, you won't.
No, I won't. Just funny because, like, of those shows that you said that there are chapters on, I don't believe that I've seen an episode of any of them. With the exception of a couple of... Yeah, I've not seen any of Breaking Bad. I've not seen any of... I saw one episode of The Wire.
Lost?
Not any of Lost. I really have not followed it feels like I say this every show, but I really haven't followed a TV show since the second season of 24.
Oh, 24. There's he's got a chapter for you then, because there's a chapter.
Oh, well, there you go. So, yeah. But yeah, no, I like good books, I guess. So, Mike, do you have a game? Did you get? Did Santa bring you anything over the Christmas break?
First, I want to piggyback a little bit on Dolan's. I watched there's a Being Human. There's a BBC version of Being Human, which is a drama, like an hour long drama, basically about a werewolf, a vampire, and a ghost living together in a house and trying to be human and like do their own thing. It sounds ridiculous. It's actually quite good. So that is available on Netflix, the first three series. they have an American version. I'd watched the first three series of the BBC version a while back, and there's an American version of it, which is better than I expected, to be honest with you. It still does that whole kind of we don't really get it because we're in America kind of thing, that Life on Mars, they had that huge problem, and The Office, like, they just don't quite understand, like, what where the beats are and, like, where the funny points are and where the good points are. But it's actually surprisingly charming. And then I actually recently watched The Inbetweeners. Like, apparently they're making an MTV show, or they already have an MTV show about this. It's basically like a TV version of American Pie that was a BBC version, a BBC show first. And I am, of course, not going to watch the MTV version because I'm sure it's going to be bad for that. But
it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but it's good and it's funny, and like the main character, like the main geek sort of Jim from American Pie kind of character, is so annoying though that like I don't. I get that he's supposed to be the annoying character, but he's so British and so obnoxious that I find it a little bit distracting, but it's good and it's funny. And I also finally saw The Dark Knight Rises. So if you guys have not watched that yet and you're like me, I felt like it was unfairly criticized because I thought it was quite good.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I saw it in IMAX is when I saw it.
Yeah, I feel like I missed out on that, but
yeah, it was a movie where the IMAX did a good job. You know, I mean it made a difference. I think it suffered from the fact that it wasn't The Dark Knight. You know, because The Dark Knight I think was pretty much the best, more or less the best superhero movie ever made for my money.
All right. So I'm going to go, and I'm probably going to get crushed for this, but like I kind of enjoyed Batman Begins more than The Dark Knight. Like the first Nolan with Cillian Murphy,
Batman is better. Like Batman the character, and I don't know why in The Dark Knight they decided to take kind of a left turn and make him put him in the back seat. And in the first one, Batman the character is far better and far more mobile, and like and they do the cool thing where he like zip lines in and zip lines out and takes a guy out with him or whatever. By the second movie it was weird that he was kind of felt or looked sluggish and not, you know, so yeah, I definitely agree Batman as a character was far more interesting in the first one. And I think he kind of fell apart in the second too. I don't know.
And it was really the Heath Ledger show in the second one. He was terrific. His performance was ridiculous. Like it was ridiculous. It deserved all the accolades it got, and like it was amazing. But like I feel like Cillian Murphy's performance as Scarecrow in the first one was kind of understated, honestly, because like he did a really really nice job too. And like I don't know. I loved all three of them. All three of them were terrific.
Yeah, they're all really good. I'm not gonna talk bad about any of them. I just think the second one, especially because of Heath Ledger.
See, I think the second one, The Dark Knight, is the most important of the movies because it finally answered the question, who is a worse actress than Katie Holmes? And we found out that it's Maggie Gyllenhaal. I was so happy when she died in that movie. I actually, honest to God, and my wife is still embarrassed by this, I clapped in the theater when...
That's outstanding.
That's excellent. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the website, but there was a website that would always refer to her as the sad turtle.
That's exactly awesome. What she is.
Isn't it? It's just a little, it's a little too close to home.
So, but my video game, so I recommended this month, probably the first podcast first or second podcast we ever did, I heartily recommended The Walking Dead based on solely a demo I played of The Walking Dead. I'm almost done with episode 4 of 5 of The Walking Dead, and I can this is good storytelling. Like, it's a gripping... $25 for the entire series it's probably over 10 hours that you'll be playing it. It is actually and I hate the show. I've never read the comic. Like, it is, it's just amazing storytelling in video game form. And, like, gameplay wise, whatever. It's no great shakes. Like, they did a good job making a point and click adventure feel like I don't have to just click on everything. Like, I actually sort of have some direction and I got to get from point A to point B. And, like, if someone just says, hey, go talk to Clementine, like, I know I don't have to, like, look in this file cabinet and, like, check these bookshelves and, like, do all a bunch of stupid shit in between. I know I'm confident just being able to just go to Clementine and talk to Clementine. It is, but the storytelling is just, just off the charts. It's, it's, I, like, welled up multiple times. It's so dark and, like, there's so many, like, just horrific moments that I'm sure were probably in the comic. I feel like the TV show missed out on a lot, but it's terrific storytelling. It's such a good combination of gaming and storytelling that it is. I'm wholeheartedly recommending it.
Yeah, what's funny about that, and it's getting, I think it's going to wind up being like the game of the year or whatever, because it's getting a lot of press. Yeah. What's funny is, I mean, it was scripted by several people, but one of them was a guy named Gary Whitta, who was actually he was the editor-in-chief of PC Gamer magazine when I used to have a subscription back in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s. And so he was, like, a longtime game journalist, but then he wound up selling a script, which turned into the Book of Eli.
Oh.
And now the whatever the name of the Will Smith movie that's coming out next year, that's also a script of his. So, like, he's a Hollywood scriptwriter and scripting video games. And he's, I mean, I don't know that he's particularly entertaining to follow on Twitter, but I like, because, I don't know, it's like, I feel like I have stake in his career just because I've followed the guy for going on, what, 15 years at this point, so... So I like hearing that it's actually a good, you know.
Oh, it's terrific. And I will say, for as far as like retail games, I picked up this was a horrible choice for me to pick this game up. Demon's Souls, which is the sequel to Dark Souls, and Dark Souls was just notoriously one of the most difficult games to play. And so I picked up Demon's Souls, and I'm basically stuck, like, literally a half hour into the game. And, like, I can't, like, I'm so exhausted. It's a great looking game. Like, I can tell why people might get obsessed with this game, but, like, I do not have the patience to play the same, you know, 5 minutes of a game over and over and over again anymore. Like, that's all video games were in the 80s when we were growing up, when I was, well, you guys too, when we were all growing up. Like, that's all games were designed to be, like,
incredibly hard.
Yeah, and master. If you think, how hard was Super Mario Brothers? Like, if you didn't know all the tricks and that was a hard-ass game. Contra, if you didn't have the code, that was a hard-ass game. And I will say, though, I could have beaten it on three guys, and I did multiple times. But, like, those games were designed to be master this 5 minutes of gameplay and move on. And, like, it's cool that Demon's Souls does that, and it's a
for those revelation. 12-year-olds out there.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But for me, when I just want to make progress and, like, see how a story unfolds and stuff like that, I don't really know if it's for me. Yeah. But I can actually confidently, I was pretty confident when I endorsed The Walking Dead a while ago that it was a great game. I can confidently say almost 4/5 of the way through the game, my God, it's an art piece. I mean, like, it's it plays out differently every time you play the game because of the choices you make. And I love the mechanic that they have that, like, they force you. There's a timer bar, so you have to, like, make quick decisions. And, like, in action-wise and dialogue-wise, you have to make quick decisions. And, like, it's kind of your first instinct, which I love. It actually makes you feel like you would be how you would react in these situations. It's a terrific, they did an amazing job. So
nice. Yeah, I'm probably going to wind up playing that. Well, because I think the first chapter is free right now. On it's like, you know, the first one's always free on Xbox Live or whatever. So or I think it's also on
the iPad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was at least till the end of the year last year for Xbox. So I hope it's.
Yeah, I don't know if it still is. Yeah, but
regardless, the episodes are $5 a piece. It's $25 for the entire season. Like, and it's over 10 hours probably of gameplay, and it's gameplay like it's actually worth playing through. Like, it's not. It's terrific.
Nice. Yeah, so as far as I've actually been playing a little bit of video games lately, I got Modern Warfare 3 or whatever. Modern Warfare 3.
Black Ops. Oh.
Well, no, I'm always a year behind because I think paying $60 is kind of ridiculous, but I'm willing to pay $30-$35 for a game. I played through the original Black Ops. I played through Modern Warfare 3, and then I played through, I'm in the middle right now of playing through the first Mass Effect, which I actually bought new, but then realized at the time you could not play it on an SD television because none of the dialogue, like when you were dealing with your guns and whatnot, you couldn't read anything because it didn't show up on the SD. So I've basically been sitting on it for, 5 years or whatever.
Wait, you have played the original Mass Effect?
Yeah, because I remember, I've only owned an HD TV for the last 2 months, so I'm catching up on all this stuff. But the original Mass Effect, like it quite a bit, but the god dang... what do you call it? The planet surface thing with the rover?
That's the worst.
Getting on my nerves. The rest of it I'm loving, but that stuff is just shoot me.
just for the record, it gets I think it gets slightly worse in Mass Effect 2. They're like,
don't tell me that.
No. Mass Effect 2 is one of my favorite games of all time. But like,
yeah.
I think that specific let's add time to our gameplay mechanic gets slightly worse in Mass Effect 2.
That's the thing. I'm just about done with the game. Like, I only have one more main quest to do, and I've done, like, I've tracked down, like, almost every side quest. So I'm at, like, 35 hours on the game, or four more. But I feel it just winds up feeling like 20 hours of that is just needlessly trying to get over some mountain to get to the other side. It's just stupid.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it's not worse in Mass Effect 2, but like, I'll just tell you because it's not going to be a spoiler for anyone else, and it's not going to be a spoiler for you. But basically, in Mass Effect 2, they replace that with just planet scanning, where you just like rotate like a globe around and use like a sensor to find out where you should shoot your probes. It's a ridiculous, tedious waste of time. It's insane. It reminds me of the Assassin's Creed series. And Dolan, did you finish Assassin's Creed 3?
No.
Okay.
Need to unplug your thing again.
You unplug that. Andy. And so Assassin's Creed Revelations, for whatever reason, the first Assassin's Creed, such a great game, such a beautiful game. There was a stupid, tedious, like, flag chase where you had to, like, go and, like, collect all these stupid Borgia flags, and it was a nonsense thing. It wasn't necessary to the game. Assassin's Creed Revelations, I think it was when Desmond had to do these, like, first-person platforming sections that were, like, part Tetris, part... They were just this tedious nightmare. Like, this entire great game had this, like, slog through this awful, awful, awful mechanic. And, like, it interrupted game flow. It interrupted, for such a story-driven game, it interrupted that. Just a terrible, and Mass Effect, Mass Effect 1 and 2, great games, both of them. Like,
I just love BioWare's RPGs. Like, I played both of the Knights of the Old Republic games. I can't remember the name of it. They were awesome. Played the Jade Empire. Played that one. You know, so I just love they're basically their own, more or less their own genre, and I love that genre. But they add things like that where it's just like, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah,
it's like you're in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, I don't know if it's to, like, pad their game stat, like, for time to complete, But it's just tedious and awful. And Mass Effect 3 didn't really have it. They had this sort of optional like online like capture the galaxy kind of thing where like if you played online it like boosted your resources to like finish the game and like have a better ending. But it was also silly, but like again, it was not as mandatory as it was in Mass Effect 1 and 2. And yeah, it's frustrating. It's very, very frustrating, but it's a great story, great game. Definitely play through 2 and 3 as well. It'll take
I'm going to. Yeah. it's going to take me another 80 hours, so. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't know.
Important character too, because it's fun.
Yeah. That's what I was complaining to my brothers the other day. Whenever I play these games, whenever I play BioWare games, I always screw them up because I spend like 6 hours setting up my character, and then invariably I just wind up screwing it up entirely. And now all of my screw ups are going to carry through three different games. All right. Well, it sounds like I think we're good to go. It sounds like. Andy's microphone's starting to go crazy, and it's fine. It's fine now.
I fixed it now.
He fixed it, and Mike's. I don't know if he just humped your mic or what.
Oh, I hump my mic all the time.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah, got to really break it in. So, any final parting shots, anyone?
I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, with that. I think we are going, and we are gone.